Hi, this is Eric Elnis, and this is another installment of the Crosswalk America podcast. I'm sitting here this evening by phone with Michael Zimmerman, who is a professor of biology and is also dean of the College of Liberal Arts and Sciences at Butler University in Indianapolis, Indiana. And Michael, a couple years ago, started a very interesting project that gets us right into the heart of the debate currently raging in some areas of the country between creation and evolution, and of course there's intelligent design out there now and so forth, really engaging an issue that's quite troubling for many Christians in this country on either side of the equation, people who believe that the Bible was is the literal, inerrant word of God, and therefore would see that as implying that the earth is only 6,000 years old, and other Christians who believe that the scientific understanding of evolution better describes what's actually going on and see that as not a contradiction to their faith. So it's a very relevant issue these days, and Michael, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And can you tell me, tell us what is the Clergy Letter Project that you started a couple years ago, and what called you into action?
Well, the clergy letter itself is a two-paragraph note written by a member of the clergy explaining why Christians should have no problem accepting evolution and accepting their own Christianity, their own faith. 2 years ago, a small town in northwest Wisconsin, Grantsburg, Wisconsin, their school board passed what were probably the most restrictive anti-evolution amendments in the country at the time. People called me because they knew I was interested in this issue, and they wanted to know what was I going to do to fix the problem. And at the time, I'd never heard of Grantsburg, Wisconsin. I tried to help out people in the local community who were really upset by the attack on high quality science education in their schools, and started coordinating various groups. We submitted a letter to the school board and the local papers from liberal arts deans in the state of Wisconsin. At the time, I was a dean in Wisconsin, which is why I got involved in a Wisconsin issue. We also submitted letters to the school board from a joint letter from biology professors around the state and religious studies professors, trying to show that both sides of the issue, if you will, religious people, religious studies people who study religion for a living, and biologists found the intrusion of intelligent design or the intrusion of young earth creationism into the public schools in Grantsburg to be an affront to high quality education. We also had groups of anthropologists, of geologists, of high school and middle school science teachers. And then finally, after all of those letters with probably a couple thousand signatures altogether were submitted, a friend of mine wrote the clergy letter itself because I thought what we really needed to do is to get the clergy involved in this fight to demonstrate very clearly that it's a political fight, it's not a religious fight. It's not a fight between religious leaders and biologists. Most or many religious leaders are on the side of high-quality science education and understand what modern biology is all about and are comfortable with modern biology.
Very interesting. And so what has been the response to that letter? How many clergy have signed it?
You know, I think the response has been absolutely overwhelming. As of today, we have about 10,513 clergy from around the country who have signed that letter saying that religion and science are, in fact, compatible, that there's no problem believing in both. We've limited the clergy letter to just Christian clergy. I've had to turn away probably hundreds of people of other faiths, and we've done that because the fight is typically with Christian fundamentalists. So I thought it would be best if we just garnered the forces of Christian clergy members. Similarly, I've turned away hundreds of people from around the world, people outside of the United States who wanted to sign on. But again, I wanted to make a political statement that there are thousands upon thousands of Christian clergy working and living in the United States who do not see a problem with what those shrill fundamentalists are forcing people to do. They're saying categorically, you have to choose between science and religion. And here we have over 10,500 people who have devoted their life to Christianity, who spend their life teaching, working with the teachings of Jesus Christ, saying that's just a false dichotomy. You don't, in fact, have to choose.
Well, let's explore that for a little bit. I want to understand a little bit more about what is so threatening about evolution in the minds of some. You know, I've heard some say, for instance, that, well, evolution is simply a theory out there, a scientific theory, and so shouldn't the scientists themselves be open to alternative theories then, such as creationism or intelligent design? How would you respond to that?
That's a very good question, I think. There are multiple layers of a response. The first one is to demonstrate, or to articulate at least, the fact that when we talk about theory in science, we mean something dramatically different than when we talk about theory in common parlance. When you or I are walking down the street and talking and saying, I have a theory about what happened yesterday, what we mean is we have an idea. In science, it doesn't get much better than theory. For something to be elevated to the status of theory, it has to have broad explanatory power across a wide range of scientific discipline. It has to have a huge body of scientific experimentation supporting it. It has to have lots and lots of experiments that have shown that the ideas could have been falsified, but they were not. That is, data and experiment after experiment have to be supportive of that idea. We don't seem to get all bent out of shape when we talk about the theory of gravity. And in fact, if you think about what we know about gravity and what we know about evolution, we know infinitely more about evolution, about its mechanisms, about how it works, about every aspect of it, than we do about gravity. We don't even know what the mechanism of gravity is. Some physicists claim that there's a particle that we've yet to discover, yet to know if it really exists, that they've tentatively called a graviton, that's responsible for gravity. Others scoff at the idea. And yet, we don't see people picketing the fact that we teach the theory of gravity in our schools. The same should be true with evolution. It's such a well-established theory that, as the great population biologist Theodosius Dobzhansky said a good number of years ago, nothing in biology makes sense except in the light of evolution. That's the kind of theory it is. It provides a unifying concept, a unifying construct for all of biology.
And does science know the trigger for evolution?
It's not clear what exactly you mean by the trigger. If we define evolution carefully, what evolution is a change in allele frequencies in a population over time. What that means is the genetic composition of a population changes over time. There are lots and lots of mechanisms for such evolutionary change. We can measure them, we can see them, we measure them in the laboratory, we measure them in the field, we can do experiments, we can provide artificial selection to induce evolution to occur in a certain way, perhaps. We can look at random mutation, which is a form of evolutionary change. In general, in basic evolutionary biology classes, it turns out we teach that there are five different modes of evolutionary change. There are five different mechanisms for populations to evolve. The real question that evolutionary biologists have is how important is any one of those mechanisms in any particular location at any particular time. Not does evolution occur. We see it every day and we measure it every day.
So what is so threatening then to those who hold to a creationist point of view, if the body of scientific knowledge is so vast and great, why would anybody object then to the theory of evolution?
You know, that is exactly the most important question. It's difficult to answer it. One answer, clearly, is the people who object most strenuously seem to be biblical literalists, people who believe the Bible as written literally says exactly what happened. It says that the earth is about 6,000 years old. It says that the earth was created in 6 days, and they mean 24-hour days. And they're worried, I believe, that if we start looking at any parts of Genesis as metaphor, as just a wonderful story that was written in the only language, the best language, that people of the time had to transmit important truths to us, but not scientific truths, if we look at that as metaphor, they're worried we're going to have to look at the entire rest of the Bible as metaphor, and therefore we throw out everything of importance. That seems to me to be a not very productive way to look at a body of human writing. I guess there are also people who are worried that if we accept an evolutionary view, it takes God out of the process. That if humans evolve, for instance, from other species, just like all species evolve from a common ancestor, what role does God have to play? And there are thousands upon thousands of religious leaders in Christianity. There are thousands upon thousands of theologians who have come to grips with that fact, that God played whatever role he decided he wanted to, but he used evolution as a mechanism. We had problems. The Catholic Church, at least, had problems when scientists decided, when Copernicus decided, that the Earth is not the center of the universe any longer. We've come to grips with that, and most creationists, not all, but most creationists accept that. The third problem, I think, is that fundamentalists often believe that what evolutionary biologists are trying to do is disprove the existence of God. And that's really a troubling point, because science, by definition, can't address the existence of God. It's just not a scientific question. There are so many issues that are of true importance to the human condition, issues like those of religion, issues like those of morality and aesthetics and politics, perhaps, things that most of us care deeply about, that science simply can't address. That doesn't mean that scientists as individuals don't have something to say about religion and politics and aesthetics, but they can't use the mechanism of science to draw conclusions about any of those things. And what seems to me to be so terribly sad is for those religious leaders who believe that science can disprove the existence of their God, what they're saying to their parishioners is that their faith is awfully weak, that their faith, by definition, isn't faith. That you can't prove science, you can't prove the existence of God scientifically, you have to take it on faith. And that's a different way of understanding the world than is a scientific worldview.
Well, where does intelligent design fit in all of this then? Is that an alternative between creationism and evolution, or what are your thoughts on that?
It clearly is not an alternative. What intelligent design is the latest incarnation of creationism dressed up to look as much as it can like science. Intelligent design has absolutely no scientific content, however. It doesn't have any scientific content because basically what it says is that there are pieces of the world, usually small pieces of biology, that are so complex in their very nature that if you take apart any piece of it, intelligent design proponents claim, the whole piece will fall apart and it doesn't, the larger entity no longer works. This is not a new concept. William Paley in 1802 published the first book about this concept. We have not evolved in terms of coming well beyond William Paley in 200 years. What intelligent design has shown us is incredible scientific arrogance. It's scientific arrogance because scientists proceed by investigating the unknown. Everything a scientist does is not known until he or she discovers something about it. To say, as some intelligent designers do, that I've looked at this system, I know there's nothing more to be learned about it, I therefore have to conclude God did it in this way, is just an arrogant view of your own ability to look at the world. And what you're concluding is nobody beyond you, nobody who comes after you, can look at the world and this piece of it and learn anything about it that you yourself haven't learned. When we go back, we look at atoms and cells and nuclei of cells. Everybody used to say each of those parts, an atom or a nucleus or a cell, was irreducibly complex. It was the simplest piece that we ever knew anything about. And you know, every one of those pieces, as scientists have discovered it, we've discovered the same thing. As scientists have investigated, we've discovered that there's much more to a cell than we originally thought. There's much more to an atom, to a nucleus, than we ever thought. None of those are irreducibly complex. They're all made up of smaller and smaller parts. That's why there isn't a single hypothesis that intelligent design posits. What it says is, this is what, as we see things, is how God made it, and it couldn't be any other way. And you ask, how do you test that? And they say, you don't, we know. That's not science. That's something well beyond science that should not be taught in public school classes.
When I was doing, a couple of years ago, I wrote a book called The Phoenix Affirmations, A New Vision for the Future of Christianity, that was released last year, actually. And doing research on that book for Affirmation 10, or the Phoenix Affirmations, which is one that Affirmation 10 says that Christian love of self includes claiming the sacredness of both our minds and our hearts, recognizing that faith and science, doubt and belief serve the pursuit of truth. I started looking at a lot of websites out there by creationists and intelligent design people and so forth, and noticed that there are some creationists actually who also reject intelligent design, are actually pretty hot under the collar over intelligent design people. Do you know much about their objections to intelligent design?
Yeah, it's kind of fascinating. What we have in the country is a very strange set of bedfellows right now. The two main creationist groups, if you will, can be defined fairly easily. One are the young earth creationists, people who literally take the Bible literally, if you will, and believe that the world was created in 6000 BC, approximately. The other main group right now are those who are promoting intelligent design. For the most part, they believe the world is millions of years old. They accept almost all of evolution. They just believe that there are parts of the living world that had to be created, and therefore it demonstrates the existence of God. They've come together in city after city. They came together in Grantsburg, Wisconsin when I got involved. They came together in Dover, Pennsylvania for a while. They came together because what they both share is an antipathy for a full explanation of evolution. But when you get past the lack of acceptance of all of evolutionary biology, they have virtually nothing in common. So the young earth creationists are happy to go along with a portion of the intelligent design paradigm, but not most of it. The piece that they like most, the piece that is clearly 100% political and has nothing to do with science really at all, except it's the most dangerous part, comes from the Discovery Institute in Seattle. And what they want, well, the reason they are pushing intelligent design, is they want to move science away from a materialistic explanation of natural phenomenon. As I said before, science is self-limiting. Science can't ask and can't answer questions about really important parts of the human condition. It can only ask questions and answer questions about physical entities. What the Discovery Institute wants is to move towards a supernatural piece of science where the very existence of God can be scientifically studied. I think these people, quite frankly, have science envy. They want science to be used to affirm the existence of their God. And it can't do that. And as I said, it's a terrible shame that these people don't have enough faith, that they need to look to science to ratify their own faith. But if we move to the supernatural and bring that into science, we have nothing left. Anybody in any experiment can conclude God did it at that moment, and there's nothing else to study. You know, you take a test in a eighth grade biology class, and the answer is God made it happen. You can't mark that wrong.
So it does seem like there's a difference between the creationists and evolutionists. And I had to wonder, this is just my own theory, I'd be curious to see what you think of it. Even though I don't personally also affirm intelligent design, I think it's flawed for the very reasons you were mentioned. It did seem to me as if perhaps there's a body of people out there right now who actually have been taking science seriously enough that they've moved beyond the strict literalism that they used to have, and are in some ways trying to process that. Of course, they've heard all their lives that evolution means there is no God and it's going to deny the existence that they're all secular humanists and so forth. But is it possible that some of the people who are attracted to intelligent design actually may be closer to perhaps where you would want them to be than we think? That perhaps this is a step toward, and I'm not saying all of them, I'm wondering if there are people there who are using that idea as a way of saying, you know, science has convinced me about a few things. Maybe they're not all the way, but they've convinced me of a few things. So what do you think of that?
Could well be. And if it is the case, that's dangerous, because the people who are truly promoting intelligent design are not doing it for religious reasons. They're not doing it as a middle ground. They're doing it to change the nature of science and to redefine our relationship with nature. What really is striking is whenever the general public is surveyed, they demonstrate a great and grave misunderstanding about what evolution is and what science is. Whenever, for the last 30 years, people are given the choice, do you believe in creation or now intelligent design? Do you believe in evolution? The vast, vast majority of them come down on the side of creation. That's exactly what the Clergy Letter Project is designed to combat. The Clergy Letter Project is designed to demonstrate to the vast middle ground, the huge middle ground of the American population, that when given a choice between science and religion, the choice that's being presented to you, especially by those truly shrill, shrieking fundamentalists, is not a real choice. You can have both. The Clergy Letter Project is, in a sense, designed to reclaim Christianity from the fundamentalists and make Christianity compatible, or to demonstrate that it is compatible, with the modern world, with modern science.
Yeah, I would definitely fall on that ladder that it is already. We don't have to make it into anything. That's been part of the tradition since the beginning. And even in the Hebrew Bible, for instance, the as I put in my book, the word for heart and the word for mind are the same. Lev in Hebrew is the same. And also in Biblical Greek, the word for heart or cardia is often used for mind as well. They didn't see this big dichotomy between the mind and the heart, or between faith and science. And I think that's where, to me, evolution is very helpful, and that just to understand the Earth as being so old, I just become overwhelmed with awe and wonder at just the mystery of creation and how patient God must be to set up processes that just go on for millions of years and create such wonders in such an organic way. I get filled with awe and wonder when I think of evolution, rather than not denying God.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, you say it so wonderfully. I don't understand how that kind of beauty and wonderment in process can be threatening to somebody's religious belief. I mean, you know, you said it better than I, so I won't repeat it, but it's just amazing.
Well, and that's where I hope that perhaps we can find some ground with not the scientists, as you're talking about, who really assert intelligent design for political purposes.
Let me interrupt for 1 second. The only thing I would disagree with is they're not scientists. The people that are asserting intelligent design for political process, the main proponents of intelligent design, they're simply not scientists. Or if they're scientists in some field, they're not scientists in the field of intelligent design, in that there's never been, never once, a peer-reviewed experimental paper looking at intelligent design. For something to be science, it has to be out there in the scientific community using the scientific method. There isn't any science in intelligent design. But I take your point, and I apologize for interrupting.
My basic point, though, is that, like, for instance, I have a friend of mine who, before I went on the walk, and he knew we have affirmation 10 and was worried about what stance we might be taking. He's a little more conservative than I am religiously, and he gave me a video that talks about intelligent design, outlays the theory, and of course there are people who purport to be scientists on that and so forth. And I, as I watched it, I really disagreed with the scientific principles that were being offered by these people. I continued to disagree with intelligent design, but what I couldn't help being caught up in was that awe and wonder of, I mean, they do talk about the complexity of creation, and whether you think that that's going to prove that God did this, or you're going to reach a certain point where it says, well, the only explanation is that this could be God. Bottom line is just to take that look and really look at the complexity of things and how marvelously things are crafted, whether it be through the evolutionary process or what have you, is a truly ecstatic experience. And that's where it hit me that maybe we could find some common ground, not, again, with the scientists or people who purport to be scientists, but rather in the general public. We could meet in our experience of awe and wonder of things, and that perhaps maybe where Christianity should be is not in debating creation, evolution, all that, unless it, you know, obviously we have to do our work with the schools. I hope that one day Christians will be known not for all of their heat over this, but rather Christians will be known for their awe and wonder over the majesty of creation, and that's what we'll...
That would be absolutely fabulous. The one piece that I want to modify or amend just a little bit is, while I agree with you about the wonder and awe of creation, on the large scale, when you start looking at lots of specifics, instead of an intelligent designer, what we probably have is an incompetent designer. And that doesn't mean that if God did all of this, that he is incompetent. What it means is the process, the evolutionary process, in many places, ends up creating things that don't work very well.
Absolutely.
The human birth canal. It makes no sense. Think about, as Stephen Jay Gould pointed out so well, the panda's thumb. It doesn't make sense. There are so many different pieces at the small level that no good designer would ever have come up with. At the large level, using evolution to create the variety that we have and the majesty that we see around the world is phenomenal. And if that's what God did, we should stand in awe, as you said.
No, I definitely see that point also, and to me that works theologically even better. I think that God set in motion the evolutionary process. I don't have any problem with that, and I don't have any problem affirming that there's no way that science could ever prove the existence of God, or it's not the realm of science, it's not the role of religion to be science. But to me, even that notion that there are these very imperfect processes just really, to me, speaks theologically for what God does. It takes a bunch of misfits like us and creates these wonderful, beautiful, majestic expressions of humanity through just, you know, these really imperfect and ordinary and extraordinarily dumb sometimes and, you know, creations. But somehow it gets brought together and something wonderful is made of it.
Makes good sense. I can't argue with a thing you've just said.
Well, I really appreciate your taking time out for us this evening. And now, if somebody, we need to finish up, but why don't you just give us an indication, if somebody wants to get involved with the Clergy Letter Project, what do they need to do?
The easiest thing to do is simply go to the web, go to www.evolutionsunday.org. One word, evolutionsunday.org. You can read the clergy letter there. You can see more than 10,500 signatures. See if your clergy member is signed up. If he or she isn't, tell them about us. You can look at our Evolution Sunday 2007 list. Right now we have more than 500 participating congregations scheduled to do something around and on Sunday, the 11th of February. If you're a clergy member and you want to sign up, simply click on a button on the website and send me an email. My email address is mz, my initials, just mz@butler.edu.
Excellent. And our listeners could also get onto the Crosswalk America website, where we'll also be pointing to the Clergy Letter Project and also have hopefully one other podcast and also a wonderful video that we're going to be shooting very shortly, filmed at the Grand Canyon, actually. So www.crosswalkamerica.org. Well, thank you.
You guys have done fabulous work, Eric, and I'm really impressed by everything you've accomplished so far.
Thank you very much, and so have you. We really appreciate what you're doing, in our understanding, to help forward Affirmation 10 of the Phoenix Affirmations. And so good luck with the rest as you head towards Evolution Sunday, and we hope this diverts some eyes in the public to really a very important issue and an important move that we need to be making as Christians also in the modern world.
Great. Thank you so much.